Welcome to Super Talk, the podcast that scratches your superhero itch. Just two suburban dads nerding out over superhero stuff on the small screen and the big. Buckle up, people. Enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Super Talk, the weekly podcast dedicated to news and reviews of comic book media on the big and small screen. This is episode number 6. I'm your host, Brian Professor Pettis, and with me, as always, is my illustrious co-host, Titanium Tony Estrella. Double T, what's going on?
Professor, Senior Professor, que pasol, take us to school.
So before we get started, I do want to make sure we thank our sponsors, right? Because they're, you know, they're one of the reasons why we're here. So first,
absolutely,
Studio GG Studios. We always put a link to their YouTube page in the show notes. Please go check them out. Support them. I understand they got a big announcement coming up next week.
Either next week or the week after. They're merging with another studio. So they're getting bigger, badder, and they're just going to kick ass. So yeah, home of the man band, Corn on the Cob. So Studio G, G Studios, check them out. Huge supporters of ours.
Yeah, and our other sponsor, Preston's Pharmacy, two locations, one in Alexandria, one in Merrifield.
One in Arlington.
Arlington, Merrifield.
Yeah, absolutely doing COVID testing. They're going to be doing vaccine shots as well.
Yeah, they were on the news this week for the vaccine coming to the local mom and pop pharmacy. So big exposure for them this week.
Support small business people. Go to Preston's Pharmacies. And as I said last episode, they are our episode sponsor for the next couple of episodes. And those people are the real superheroes. That sounds cheesy, but fuck it. They are their superheroes. They're on the front line. They're dealing with sick people. They're getting people their medicine no matter what. And they're performing above and beyond the call of duty. So God bless those people. Real superheroes.
And thanks for their support. I mean, it's been really, really super for them to do that.
Frank O'Day, Lisa O'Day, thank you so much.
And we actually have one special episode sponsor this week. They wanted to remain anonymous, and they're going by their initials, MW. And they've got a gift for you, Tony.
Gift for me?
And
it's a small bottle of Fireball, and let me tell you something.
And it must be consumed right at this second. So, at this second.
All right.
So we
a little Fireball shot to consume.
It's a special episode sponsor, and going by MW.
MW, that MF-er. I know who he is. Some sponsor, you know. He's Mephisto. To be honest with you, he is the actual Mephisto.
Well, it looks like his picture's on the bottle, right?
Yeah, exactly. His picture is on the bottle. He is Mephisto.
All right. Well, here's to episode 6 and our episode sponsor. So thank you.
Holy cow. So good when it hits the lips. So good when it hits the lips.
So thank you, MW, for that. That was really great.
Do we really need to thank MW for that?
I know you want to do other things.
Oh, I'm going to strangle him. I'm going to absolutely strangle him.
And nobody said it was a him, so.
Yeah, but I know it's a him. Son of a.
Okay. All right. So do we want to get it straight into things this week?
Yeah, let's get into things. We got a big slate going on here, and we're going to try to keep it to a reasonable hour for you guys. First of all, let's talk about episode 5 of WandaVision. Disney Plus, Marvel Studios, once again, hit us between the eyes. A lot of questions still to be answered. But they answered a lot of questions in this episode, right?
I think that's the great thing about what Disney's doing with this series is along the way, they're answering a lot of the questions that we have, but they're only generating more questions along the way as well.
Right.
So we're getting answers, but then they start generating more questions in it, and it's all we can talk about. It's so consuming.
Yeah, you know, they're hit the vein and just pump me full of information and questions. So I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of theories, but I'm glad they answered a few things. We do know Vision is post-mortem. He is brought alive. She did steal him from a
sword facility.
She busted in there. We did see footage of that. Whether it was real or not, we don't know, but we have to assume that it was.
So convenient that that footage just all of a sudden showed up. You know, Director Hayward said, I just got access or was able to just release this footage. And he's known about it the whole time. He's the director of S.W.O.R.D.
Thank you. Is he he's a shady.
We said this last week. He's totally shady.
Tyler Haywood, acting director. He just got approval to show people this. Come on. He gives the approval. He shouldn't have to. Is there a board? Is there like
I'll
a board?
I'll just say you can't spell Hydra without Hayward.
Ooh. The professor dropping some knowledge there. Nice. So, okay. Is that your theory?
It's a working theory, yes. I believe his intentions have been questionable from the get.
From the get-go, I agree.
I just think from jump he's been shady, all from sending her on this remote assignment to all of a sudden showing up with this entire army of people and kind of having an idea of what's going on.
Right. He sent her on this.
And he would have known that Wanda broke in. He would have known that Vision was stolen, and it seemed like Wanda knows who he is.
Yeah.
So there's just way
she
too
looked
many
right
questions
at
there. Right. Well, let's get through the short synopsis of the first part of the episode. So starting off, we get Wanda and Vision with the babies, and they're having trouble putting them to sleep. They're crying.
Wait, can we just we pay a little respect for the 80s sitcom beginnings Family Times?
So, which was actually after the intro scene. But
kind of cool.
Yeah, the family ties, painting and the brush kind of hitting it, but it's actually the brush is being held up by Wanda's magic and it's painting it magically. That was great.
Yeah.
So the intro had three callbacks to 80s television shows. You had that painting, which was
Family Ties. Growing Pains,
which was the scene in the house with them in the couch and everything.
Where they're having a picnic on the lawn and everything. Yeah.
And Wonder Years was the other one.
Wonder Years. Yeah, that's cool.
So it's really great that they're
calling little vibe, a little Full House vibe there as well.
Full House. Yeah, absolutely Full House. I mean, which is, again, really ironic considering that Wanda's the younger sister of the Olsen twins who played
Elizabeth Olsen, right?
Yeah, Elizabeth Olsen is the younger sister of Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen, who played baby twins on that show. So, just kind of a really cool call.
Sisters, right? Speaking of sisters, I believe Charlie has a sister named Kendall.
Yeah,
correct.
And we do need to give a special shout out to Kendall. It is her 19th birthday today. So, happy birthday, Kendall!
Dude, you're so old. We are so old. You have a 19-year-old daughter.
I know.
Happy birthday, Kendall.
Yeah. Special shout out to my daughter. I love you. And she's loving herself down at University of Tennessee. So happy birthday, sweetie.
Good for her. Doing very well down there, I hear, too. That's great. Yeah. Good for her. Happy birthday, Kendall. I'm sorry. We got off track there.
It was a worthwhile diversion. Yes,
absolutely.
So we'll get into what happens. They have the babies. They can't get them to be quiet. And conveniently, who shows up?
Agnes.
Agnes shows up just at the right moment. Oh, I heard the baby's crying. And odd thing, is, Vision says, well, how did you know the babies were crying? And she's like, well, it was my ears, right? So she kind of had to make up why she knew the babies were crying.
Yeah, as this goes on, I'm more convinced that she is the other witch in this scenario. And the fact that she calls Wanda out, like, oh, should I do a reset?
She wanted to pick the babies up, and Vision was kind of questioning whether or not she should because are your hands clean?
She told Wanda, I should pick the babies up, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then kind of the jump cut of, should we start that over again? Should we go from the top? They were in a sitcom.
Yeah.
And, Wanda really was confused by her awareness of the fact that it wasn't going by the script, quote unquote, right?
And so, Vision is starting to become awoke, right? Awoke. The great awakening
of
Vision.
He's becoming woke.
Woke. Yeah, he's becoming woke, literally, in this show. And we get a little back and forth from Wanda and Vision here about, he's like, what, are you crazy?
What just happened with
her? Yeah, right. Did you not see what I saw? So, great scene.
But just crazy things that she did. She sprays the kids with what was it?
Lavender.
Lavender. Mm-hmm. And then she walks over looking for the brown liquor for the children.
For the
right?
children, right.
And then the children disappear, and all of a sudden they're 5 years old.
Right.
And whoa, what just happened?
They stop crying. They're five. Crying, so, to take care of their fussiness and those terrible twos, they just... you know, shot to 5 years old, which was
and question
bizarre.
Is, did they do that on their own, or was it the lavender spray that prompted them to do that, or did Agnes, you know, prompt that? We don't know.
A lot of questions.
A lot of questions. But the one thing she says right after that happened was,
"Can't control them.
Kids can't control them."
Yeah.
So we also found out during that scene that Wanda tried to quiet the children with her magic, and she couldn't.
Right.
So we've seen a couple of instances of her not be able to
control
do
the kids.
Things. Well, she couldn't control the stork from the episode where she gave birth.
Yep.
So there were a couple of things that she could not control with her magic, the kids being one of them. So she's realizing that her magical influence over the environment has some limits,
right.
But she doesn't know what they are until it happens.
So is she making the kids jump from age, from like infants to five-year-olds? Is she doing that, or are the kids doing that?
It doesn't seem like she has any influence over that. All of a sudden, they're five. She didn't do that.
Well, or later in the episode, they jump from five
to ten.
Ten in order to get the puppy.
And she didn't do that?
No.
So this was when they
found... Did Billy Wiccan do that? Is he controlling their growth for both of them?
Or somebody else.
Or somebody else.
We don't know. So...
Questions.
Yeah.
Good questions.
We see the kids, the five-year-old kids, had found a puppy. Were interested in keeping the puppy.
Raggedy dog.
Right. Looked very much like Toto, right? Right? From Wizard of Oz.
Well, I think it was a throwback to one of the Marvel comics where Vision and his wife, they had that green...
Viz was his wife's name.
Viz, and they had that dog, right? In the comics.
The dog's name was Sparky.
Sparky, there you go. So,
and so they named this dog Sparky.
Nice touch.
So the kids wanted to keep the dog. Conveniently, Agnes shows up with a dog kennel, you know, just walks right in. Oh, I saw through my window that you guys had a puppy, you know, yeah. And Wanda.
With a dog house. I mean, who does that? She's in there. She's been listening and watching. And I think Vision realizes that in the kitchen when they jump to 10 years old, he's like, she always shows up at the weirdest times, like right when you need something.
When he walks into the kitchen, he was wearing his human face. And she's like, Viz, why are you wearing your human face? And he's like, I have a feeling somebody's going to walk in at any moment. And she walks right in. So he knows something shady's going on. And then... when they name the dog Sparky, she creates the collar for the dog. Uses her magic right in front of Agnes, and
he freaks out.
He's like, "Wanda, we talked about this. We're not supposed to be doing this in front of people.
I'm tired of hiding who I am.
Tired of hiding."
Right.
Is what she said. And Agnes, by the way, had already seen the kids jump from babies to five and didn't react. Why would she, you know, go crazy about a dog collar? And then 5 seconds later, the kids were told they can't have a puppy, they're not responsible enough until they're 10, and then they age themselves up to 10, and she was right there and didn't say anything about that either.
People, if you don't think she's involved in she's woven into the fabric of what's going on, you're insane by now.
I think it's clear at this point in time, there are people that live inside of Westview who are under some level of control by somebody, and they're completely being controlled and influenced by that individual. And I think there are people that are outside of that influence. And I believe that Agnes is one of those people outside of that influence.
Playing a role to accommodate Wanda, to make her believe that she's part of what's going on in the situation that's going on. I agree with you.
She's pushing some agenda. We don't know whose, but she's pushing an agenda for sure.
Oh, well, I have my theory of who. I mean,
we all do. But
right.
Yeah. So that happens. We get the intro. Vision goes off to work, and it's a crazy situation at work. So what happens at work, Tony?
So at work, he starts to plug into a computer as the, I guess it's now the 80s. We're in the 80s.
Commodore 64, by the way, was so great. It was great to watch that on the screen.
Yeah, that was a cool throwback, right? So, and outside the Hex, which Dr. Darcy is now calling it the Hex, which is kind of cool. I'm going to adopt that. I'm going to call it the Hex, too. Inside the Hex... the outside the Hex, she's discovered that, you know what, maybe to relate to what's happening inside the Hex, we need to relate to the time period that the Hex is happening at, right? So getting back to Vision at work, he starts to work on a computer, and Norm is working on the computer, and they have that great 80s banter, sitcom banter back and forth. And then an email comes across from Sword, right? And everybody reads the email like almost robotically, like it's not part of the script. This is outside the script. What's going on? And they read that email, and then Vision comes over.
It was talking about the Maximoff incident, or...
Right. Right, what's going on in there? And it was basically an email from Sword, from Darcy, that sent in Dr. Lewis is investigating or trying to figure out what's happening on in the Maximoff.
Radiation levels are increasing.
Dangerous, right.
Right.
So very curious. And then at some point, Vision kind of does a little mind electro to Norm and brings him out of his state of... Wanda-ish, you know what I'm saying? So he
brings him out of his sitcom character, and his real persona comes back,
and he freaks out. He's like, holy shit. He's like, I'm in so much pain. I don't know what's going on.
My dad's sick. My sister's supposed to be watching him. I got to get in touch with my family.
Right. He's looking for his cell phone in his drawer. He doesn't understand. He's like, you have to stop her. It hurts so much. You have to stop her. And he starts to freak out, and Vision puts him back, but he... A part of Vision being woke, right? Awakening of that is so interesting.
So you raised a good point. He said, you have to stop her. He never said you have to stop Wanda, because Vision asked a couple of times, who? Who do I have to
agree
stop?
Agree with you 100%.
And he said, you have to stop her.
Her. Who's her?
Never said Wanda. Now, Norm knows who Wanda is somehow, some way. You would think if it was Wanda, he would have said, you have to... Wanda, that's who I'm talking about. But no, he said, you have to stop her. She's controlling us.
Is he talking about Wanda?
I doubt it. And I think that's the theory going around, that the reason why they were ambiguous about who was doing this was so that it would put questions in our head of, well, is this Wanda actually having this influence, or is it somebody else?
Once again, Marvel toying with us like we're little puppets on a string, although... There's no strings on me, right?
Yeah, right.
But puppets on a string, they're just pulling the strings to get us all excited. And oh, man, so good.
Well, then, while this is going on the outside of the bubble, we see Monica had woken up, and she was being analyzed. She was getting some tests done, some blood tests. She was getting an X-ray. They were asking her retroactively. You could hear the conversation with her and Director Hayward. How do you feel? What did it feel like? And she said, it was Wanda in my head. It was a feeling of despair, a feeling of
grief.
Loss.
Grief. That was the big word that they used, grief. So.
And then she comes out of that and her, you know, she's like, am I done? And the technician is saying, oh, you got to wait till these test results come back. Crazy thing. They show the X-ray and there's nothing on it but her hair. Her hair is the only thing on her X-ray. And she's like, we're going to have to redo these. And she's like, no. I'm done. You know, you're finished. We're done with these tests. That is absolutely 100% in line with her set of powers as...
Photon.
As Captain Marvel / Photon / Spectrum / whatever name she went by, exactly what would happen.
So what you're saying is you think she has her powers. This incident in the Hex that Wanda blasted her through and her being in there... gave her her powers?
It's a theory that either she always had them and we didn't know this, or that unlocked them, or
right.
Her getting blasted by Wanda through the Hex and being protected by Wanda's reality magic.
I'm on your ship. But
the
crazy.
X-ray coming back blank. So for those of you who want to understand it, with Captain Marvel / Photon in, you know, Monica Rambeau in the comics, she was a being of pure energy. She could transform herself into any form of light or energy that she wanted to, whether it's X-ray, ultraviolet light, infrared. She could turn herself invisible. She could fly. So the fact that she didn't show up on an X-ray tells me, as a fan of the comics, that she's got her powers.
She already has her powers.
And we're now just seeing those manifest themselves at some point
nice.
In time here.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was huge.
I'm on your bus. You're driving a crazy bus, and I'm on it.
Yeah.
I'm just a passenger.
But we see then the whole team go into a briefing room, and Director Hayward asks FBI agent Wu for...
Jimmy Wu, one of my favorite characters.
Asked him for a synopsis of Wanda Maximoff.
What's going on? Right.
And he says, born in Sokovia to two parents, the Maximoff parents.
1989. Interesting, the names of the two parents... not synonymous with her anything foster in the
parents,
comic.
Not synonymous with her foster parents in the comic books. Not synonymous with who raised her. Nothing. It was kind of two made up names.
Professor, drop some knowledge on the listeners and the watchers out here. Her father,
Magneto.
There you go.
Right. Real father, Magneto. You said it. She was raised. Her and her brother were raised by another character in the comic books, the High Evolutionary. Who we haven't gotten into, I believe, could be a potential character in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, may right. explain how Rocket Raccoon came to be. The High Evolutionary was somebody who experimented on animals and created humanoid animal versions of animals by
I can literally hear people's brains exploding.
Right.
And people through YouTube right. are like exploding right now.
Right.
So that is some deep shit that you're about to get into.
Yeah, and we won't get into that quite
but
now.
But we're going to, right?
Yeah. Well,
promise me we'll.
We will at some point in time.
We might have to do a whole episode on the Higher Evolutionary, right?
We should yeah. at some point in time. And I think
so important.
So he raised them as children, and Magneto was never really around. It came out much later in the comic books that Magneto was their actual father. So that was something that was revealed much later on. But that being said, we got this briefing from Jimmy Woo and Director Hayward, you know, simplified things of, oh, well, they were radicalized and volunteered for Hydra. And
does she have any crazy names?
Right. And they were like, does she have a code name?
Nope.
Does she go by a code name? He's like, no, there's no code name yet.
Nothing silly? Nothing questionable?
No.
Nothing that would give any kind of indication?
So this is prompting at some point in time that she will receive her code name of
Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch.
I hope so. Because that's important. I think they need to name her. So that was revealing. They answered a bunch of questions. And then you saw the footage of her stealing the dead body from a sword facility.
Again, so convenient that all of a sudden he's been given permission to release this footage.
He's the acting director. Who gave him permission?
Right. Who did he have to ask for
the
permission?
The janitor? It's like, huh?
You've
Who
been
gave
sitting
him permission?
On this forever.
Yeah.
It's just so convenient.
I think he's dirty people. That we're going on record. The professor and Titanium Tony are going on record. We think Tyler Hayward is a dirty something. Hydra, AIM, an agent. Maybe he's a bad Skrull. We don't know. He could be something completely different. He could be Nightmare. He could be Mephisto himself. Who knows? But something's going on with him, people, and we're going on record right now.
It's happening.
It's happening.
Right. So while this is all going on at Sword's Outpost, inside of the show, the two children have trained the dog to do all these tricks, and the dog starts going nuts about something outside. The three of them walk outside with the dog, and Sword had figured out that they could send something. So Wanda was actually changing things to become part of the time period.
Right. We're in the 80s, so they developed a drone to go into... Well,
they brought an 80s drone in that wouldn't be changed. So it was a brilliant thought from Monica Rambeau.
Did they have to go to Radio Shack to pick up that shit?
Right,
were they at Radio Shack?
We know this is 80s technology. But Monica figured out that her clothes were... The clothes that she came out of the hex with on her.
This is a big reveal, people.
Were her original clothes. So she was wearing a sword uniform with a Kevlar vest.
Talk about it, Professor. Preach it.
And she discovered that the clothes she came out with were part Kevlar because Wanda had just reconfigured the same clothing to be that of the period.
So how is this important, Professor? She actually doesn't just mentally change. She actually
physically alters
matter and reality. Huge.
And it also showed that things that she changes within the hex maintain those changes when they're outside the hex.
Correct.
Huge. And she figured this out because she saw the photo of the helicopter from episode 1 or 2.
Right.
It was a drone that they had sent in. And it had been turned into a toy helicopter from that time period.
Right, the 50s, right?
And she figured out, well, maybe it's because we're sending something from 2020 or 2021 into this hex field. What if we send something from the time period that the show is in right now?
It doesn't change.
It wouldn't be changed. And so they, it was a brilliant thought, and they got a drone from the 80s.
They got a visual, right?
To fly in, and she thought they were using it to communicate with her. And oh, by the way, Director Hayward had another thought about how
he
that
weaponized
drone,
the drone.
Right. He was going to shoot a missile at Wanda.
He weaponized it.
Right. And so Wanda.
What kind of weapons are in 80s drones, though, you know?
Missiles. Missiles on 80s okay. drones. Right. So he said the missile was a precaution.
Right.
And then right after that, and here's something that you probably notice as well. That drone was flying over Westview during the day. After that happened, we cut to the SWORD facility outside. Something's coming through. We have a breach. Something's coming through.
Right.
It's nighttime.
It is nighttime,
and
yeah.
she's breaking through the breach, and she comes out and confronts Director Hayward and Monica Rambeau, but it's nighttime. But back in the show, it's still during the day. So she can not only manipulate, from what we understand, manipulate the environment, but also the time of day, it seems like, because it was daytime on the show, and minutes later, she's out there breaching the perimeter. Right?
Time has been manipulated throughout this series. I mean,
everybody wears a watch. There's clocks everywhere. Yeah. So time has got to be some of this.
It's
right? got
to be a part of it, right?
Right.
So very, very revealing. Yeah. So she breaches and throws the drone at sketchy Hayward, and then does a hex spell on all the agents, and they point their guns at him. And she's like, this is your only warning. You leave me alone in here, you son of a bitch.
And Monica's trying to connect with her, saying,
she is.
You know I'm an ally. You know there's, I'm somebody
you
can trust.
Let me help you deliver your babies.
Right. You know you can trust me. Let me help you. And she says, what can you do for me? She said, what do you want? She says, I have everything I want. Just leave me alone.
Leave me alone.
Right.
So that was a great scene.
It was fantastic.
You see
and,
her
oh, by
outside.
The way, her accent's back.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard. Well, I didn't see it. You know. I heard that.
You saw the accent.
She actually had a little bit of tint of an accent,
yeah,
right?
Her accent was back.
Yeah.
So while it's been gone the whole time we've been in the show, it's now back inside of what it's outside of Westview. It came back.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of part of what I recognized as well. And then as she goes back in, she kind of fortifies the hex and turns it this brighter red, like, all right, if you guys are going to start slipping shit in, I'm going to put a little bit more energy behind this. And she kind of looks at the hex and like it turns this big red.
But it was an amazing demonstration of how powerful she is.
Yeah, I mean, her powers
are
tremendous.
Not only took control of everybody's mind, if you remember, it was kind of a callback to the scene from the first X-Men movie where Magneto picked up all of the guns from all the cops that were sitting outside of the museum that they were robbing and pointed them at themselves.
Yeah.
It kind of called back to that a little bit.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
Really cool.
Yeah, very powerful. We know she's one of the most powerful. And even Monica brings it up. It's like she almost took down Thanos.
So let's talk about that scene. So they were talking about how they could somehow, some way get back into the hex, right? Get back into the environment. Monica says something to the fact, I think if I design a vehicle that can protect me against photons and X-rays and some other matter-changing thing, I think I could get in. And then she says, I think I know an aerospace engineer who might be able to help out with this.
Who is that aerospace engineer?
So that just brought up so many questions. Number one, who would she know?
Right.
Like, so what aerospace engineer would she know? That's the big question. And there's a number of theories of who it could be.
It's not Reed Richards. It's not Dr. Fantastic. It's not. Because he was more than just an aerospace engineer. He was way more than just an aerospace engineer. So I know a lot of theories that it's Dr. Reed Richards from the Fantastic Four, but I don't think so.
If it is, Reed
let's
Richards
go down that road.
If it is, and he shows up on the show, that would be a WTF moment. It would literally shock everybody.
And we're going to talk about that in the episode. We're going to talk about a WTF moment. Elizabeth Olsen, in an interview, made an insinuation that there is a WTF moment in this show that is similar to The Mandalorian when Luke Skywalker shows up The Mandalorian. And let me tell you something, people. It has to be an absolute mind-blowing, because that almost crashed the internet. When Luke Skywalker showed up on The Mandalorian, it was the talk of the town. Everybody was talking about it. It was the best-kept secret in Hollywood. It blew people away, and the internet went absolutely wild. So I think it's one of our questions. We can get into it a little bit later, but I don't think it's Reed Richards. Do you want to hear what my philosophy is, where I think it is?
Okay.
I think it's Ironheart. I think it's the young girl that plays Ironheart, who she has already connected with, that possibly could be this brilliant genius at MIT that creates the Ironheart armor. That's just my thing.
Could be a great way to introduce that person as a character.
Right?
There's another character in the comic books that it could be. Mr. Marvel is an aerospace engineer from the comic books. The Blue Marvel. It was his code name. He was an aerospace engineer, and him getting superpowers. That's somebody else that it could be. So there's some theories around there who it could be.
You know, it's sexy when you start talking knowledge. Your comic book knowledge, when it starts to come out, it's ridiculously sexy. So, the women out there are absolutely losing their
crazy.
Mind. They're going crazy.
But all it did was say, who could this be? And of course, we're all hoping it's Reed Richards, but I agree with you, Tony. I think that would be... That would be almost too much. I would lose my mind if John Krasinski shows up on the show.
So much more. Okay.
But if he showed up on the show as Reed Richards, and if they had been able to keep this secret for this long, just like they did with Luke Skywalker,
wow,
it would blow my mind. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But that was huge. And also the other thing that happened during that scene was she kind of shunned Captain Marvel a little bit. Because Jimmy Woo was talking about how, well, you know, Wanda almost beat Thanos, and Jimmy Woo was like, well, Captain Marvel would have done it too. And she's like, oh, no, we're not talking about her.
She avoids it. Monica Rambeau avoids it. And I think it's because of the timeline where her mother was dying. Captain Marvel was off world, and she was in the blip, and Captain Marvel wasn't there for her mother when she died. She died alone instead of with her best friend. I think that has something to do with
it. Or it could be that her mom got cancer from something she was doing in space with Captain Marvel, and she blames her for it. We don't know.
But there's bad blood there, right?
It's got to be something going on.
Yeah, something's going on there.
Yeah.
She changes the subject, and even Darcy gives a look to Jimmy Woo like, ooh, don't fucking mention that. We don't go there.
But that's something we've seen in some of the trailers for upcoming episodes. They do build a vehicle. And they do try to
slam
the
into
perimeter. Yeah. So we see this vehicle being built, and it's being built by somebody, and hopefully we find out who that is at some point.
That'd
in time.
Be cool.
Yep.
Very cool.
So back in the show, dogs run away. They're chasing after it, and all of a sudden it shows up dead at whose house?
Agnes's house. There's a lot of questions there, right? Because this raises, and I think it's really important to the show. I just don't know where it falls in importance. Like, okay.
Let's go through that.
So the dog dies. Whether Agnes killed it or not, the dog dies from eating azaleas. I don't know if it's bad. I don't eat azaleas.
And that's how Sparky died in the comic books, by the way, by eating something that was bioorganic.
I did not know that.
So it died by eating something it got.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that's how that dog in the Vision Limited series died as well, was by eating something.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it dies eating azaleas, and the kids are distraught. They're like, Mom, you know, bring the dog back. We know you can. And she refuses. She either refuses or she can't bring the dead back.
Or she said... She said you shouldn't, or this is not something you can run away from. I've tried, not something you can't reverse this. And as Agnes actually asks her, can you do that? You can do that? And she's like, no, I really... And I think she honestly was saying, I can't bring the dog back.
Something alive, right? Living. Like, we know Vision is a symbiote? He's a robot. He's synthetic.
Synthezoid, right?
Synthezoid.
That's the way Darcy refers to him, as a synthezoid.
Love when you drop knowledge on me. Keep doing it, brother. Hey, robot, I'm going to go simplify. And she brought him back, right? So
we've been led to believe that she was the one that brought him back.
Yeah. So I agree with you. A lot of questions there. I think it's a life lesson for the kids. Like, dead is dead. Make sure you respect dead is dead.
And she and they wanted to age themselves up to prevent them from having these emotions, and she convinces them not to do that. Don't age yourselves up out of this. You know, right. you have to deal with this emotion.
Age yourselves up.
Right.
Man.
Crazy.
I'd like to age myself backwards. Being an old man, a geek, a nerdy geek, I'd like to age myself backwards and have that ability.
So let's get to the ending. So the big ending, we get back to the house, and Vision and Wanda are in an argument. He mentions that he talked to Norm, and he released him from her influence.
Right.
And he was worried. He has a family. He's scared. He's in pain. What are you doing with all these people?
He gets, like, physically upset, and he raises his voice.
He says, like, you can't control me like you control all these other people. And she says, oh, can't I? And then all of a sudden the credits start rolling.
She starts to end the show.
Right.
She starts to end the show because she didn't like what's going on. He's pushing her and asking questions, and it's about to end the show. She's like rolling the credits. No, this conversation is fucking over. Roll credits.
Right.
You know, like, that's how you
shut
down an audience.
I'm going to bed. And he's like, no, you're not.
God, you know, if I could do that with my wife. Roll credits. No, I'm not cleaning up
the
bedroom.
But they go into the next room. Roll credits. They have a full on argument.
And Vision gets, literally, he starts to elevate, right? He starts to levitate, and she starts to levitate, and they are going back and forth. And Vision's like, what's going on? I don't remember anything beyond why I'm here.
He says he doesn't remember anything about his life prior to Westview. He doesn't know who he is, and he's scared. And she brings him down, says, you're my husband, you're our children's father, that's yep. all that matters. And
he seems to calm down after that.
She comes down and says, do you honestly think that I have the ability to control everybody that's in this town? Sending them to the doctor, walking their dogs, mowing their lawns. I can't do all of that. So she openly admits she wouldn't have the ability to do all that. So if she doesn't, who does? Right?
I got you. Yeah.
But then he asks a great question. Why are there no children in Westview? There are no children in Westview because I walk by an empty playground every morning on my way to work. There are no children here.
He's asking questions that we want answers to, right?
Right.
So he's asking those tough questions. Yeah, there are no children. All this benefit for the children.
Could be two things. You remember what Agnes said? Children, you can't control them. So maybe it's that whoever has influence over this environment understands that if children were part of the environment, the influence that the environment has over people wouldn't fall on them. And they would always be outside of that influence. So, well, let's take them out of the equation so we can control the people we can control. The other theory is maybe some evil force is feasting on the souls of these children or holding them captive somehow, some way, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't know the answer to that. I wish I did. I hope we find out. But I do know that we will see other, not necessarily children, but we will be introduced to other teenagers in this show in the upcoming episodes.
And we've seen the previews for the next episode, which I believe is the Halloween episode.
Where the kids are all over the
street. And we see children all over the place. So
right.
Where did they come from all of a sudden?
Exactly. Because it's become an issue now.
The fact that Vision brought it up, all of a sudden that becomes a remedy, right?
Right.
All of a sudden, there's children around everywhere, right?
It's Halloween.
So let's get to the big reveal. Really crazy that Vision's saying, Wanda, you need to stop influencing these people. That what we're doing here is wrong. There's a knock at the door. And she says, I didn't do that.
Right. You think I did that. I didn't do that.
And
it's the pinnacle of their argument, right?
He doesn't believe her. She convveniently had a knock on the door right when we're in the middle of an argument. And lo and behold, she answers the door. We see
Evan Peters.
Well, we see the
Quicksilver.
Well, we see the Quicksilver from behind, and the show flips over to Darcy's view of the television show, and she's like, oh my God.
They recast Pietro?
And it's Evan Peters.
What a great line. She's the greatest.
What a great line.
They recast Pietro?
So,
because she's watching it as like she's watching a Netflix series, you know?
So
she's watching
ironic.
Hulu. She's watching her, you know, Handmaid's Tale. She's watching whatever show that you can watch on Netflix streaming. That's the way she's looking at it. And those are her eyes,
it's a sit-
right?
Well, it's a sitcom
it's
trope.
It's a sitcom for her.
Right? But think about
how
this.
Great is that?
Bewitched. We had Major, what's his name? And then we had like two husbands.
Yeah.
At some, they were recast in
they
the
were
middle,
recast.
Middle of the show.
Yeah.
And, oh,
no
by the way, it's happened in Marvel several times. Yeah. We had, you know, Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk now. And we had Ed Norton as the Hulk before. We had Terrence Howard as Rhodey, and now we have Don Cheadle as Rhodey. So it's happened before in Marvel.
Yeah, absolutely. So recasting
somebody
midstream.
Now, here's the big question, Tony, and I really want to ask you this. This is really the nuts and bolts of the episode. We've now been shown a version of Quicksilver in this show. She didn't recognize him at first. He had to basically say...
But then she kind of does. Her body language is like, yeah.
Pietro? And he said, what? No, hug for your big brother.
Yeah.
Can I hug you to death? Right?
Uncle Joey, right?
Yeah, right.
From Full House.
Right.
She starts acting like a Guido, right. You know? Like the New Yorker. Hey, you got no hug for your brother?
Yeah. Can't your brother give you his big sister, a little sister, long lost sister, a hug to death?
Yeah,
you
and,
know?
She's like shocked, like Pietro. So... What's your question?
So the question is, him showing up right now is one of three things. It's either them bringing back the Quicksilver from an alternate reality, which is the Fox universe, the Quicksilver that was in the X-Men movies in the Fox universe. Oh, by the way, time period right around, remember the movies were in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And they never aged in those movies somehow.
I'm picking up what you're putting down, Professor.
So is it that Quicksilver coming into this reality through some mechanism?
Yep.
She doesn't think she did this. She doesn't think she has the power to do this, but it happened. So she's being made to believe that she has some influence over this happening. But why would it be that version of this Quicksilver? So question is it the Quicksilver from the Fox universe coming into our universe? Is it somebody else pretending to be Quicksilver, right?
Right.
Or is it something that we're not getting at all? And I'm going to tell you what I think, and I'm going to be so pissed if it's true. Go ahead, but you go first.
I'd like to see what's behind curtain number B.
So you don't think it's you don't think it's Quicksilver?
If it's number one, what you said, and it's a throwback and bringing in a mutant Quicksilver from a different timeline. Brilliant. I'm all right with that.
That's I'm cool with that too.
Very cool.
Hey, great Quicksilver. Creative way to introduce these Fox
loved him
characters.
In the X-Men movies. One of my favorite scenes in those X-Men movies was
him
both
in,
of them.
In both of the X-Men movies.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's number two. I think it's Mephisto transforming himself, introducing himself as her brother, to start to even things out with Vision, because he's becoming woke and he's becoming aware of what's going on. And this will kind of, I think it's Mephisto.
So when Evan Peters was first cast in WandaVision, we all thought that he was going to be the Fox Universe version of Quicksilver.
Quicksilver.
Said, oh, that's pretty cool.
Well,
but that
makes sense.
But then we also heard he was being cast as Mephisto.
The big villain, right.
The big villain in the show. And so there were some conflicting reports there. So your theory makes sense. Here's what I'm going to tell you. It would be so cheap of Marvel to do this if that's the case. Because the only people in the world that know that version of Quicksilver exists are us, the audience. Nobody else in the television show, no other character, no other participant in this show knows that that person, that actor, played Quicksilver.
Okay.
We're the only ones that know that.
All
right. They're basically playing on our knowledge of him as Quicksilver in the Fox universe to assume that they're now integrating that universe into ours.
With no explanation. Just pop in.
So if it is Mephisto disguising himself as her brother, she's never seen this version of him. No other character's seen that version of him. Nobody has. So we're being taken advantage of there. They're taking advantage of
us. Do you feel violated?
Yes,
is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is if that's what Marvel's doing, they're completely playing on our prior knowledge of him in the Fox universe and taking advantage of us. I think it's cheap. I think if they do that, it's cheap.
Well,
I would be okay if it were bringing the alternate reality version of him in, the only one that happens to be alive at this moment.
He was extremely popular, though, Professor.
Great character.
He was very popular.
Great character.
So you would be adding to that, like, you know, heartstrings of all the fans of those X-Men movies right. by bringing him in that
you
way.
Would.
Right?
I'm good with that.
But you feel it's cheap.
I feel that if they do the other thing, if they make it Mephisto or somebody disguised at that as that version, that's cheap.
Okay. All right.
No, I think bringing him in,
pulling on your heartstrings and then flipping the script.
Right. Because they're taking advantage of the only people that are aware of that person playing Quicksilver.
I get it. Okay.
The audience is the only one that knows this.
Yeah.
The people in the show have never seen this version of Quicksilver before. So why would they? So they're basically playing with us. And I hope, in some ways, I'm fearful that it is what you said, that it is Mephisto disguising himself. You know, this
or
is,
Nightmare.
Or somebody.
Right.
Or the Grim Reaper or somebody that's...
Grim Reaper, right.
Right. And I'm fearful, but they're taking advantage of us at that point in time. They're taking advantage of our prior knowledge of those movies.
We know Evan Peters is a great actor. He showed a very dark side in American Horror Story, where he played a absolute psychopath. I don't watch that. I'm not a regular of that show, but he played an amazing multiple characters of a pretty deep psychopathic crazy guy in that show. So it would make sense that they put him as a villain.
I would be almost more comfortable had they cast him as somebody completely different and saying, oh, okay, you cast an actor as a completely different character, but to cast him in the same character that he played in the Fox universe is just playing with us. If it's not him.
Gavin Klingham texted me the other day, the kid from New York who had a question last week, he texted me the other day and Gavin said, that is the first time we saw a mutant. They're bringing in the multiverse mutant from another timeline. He was convinced that that's who he is. I didn't want to bust his bubble, but I said, well, there could be several other possibilities here. Don't get your hopes up. But what a great character. Okay, let's see how that plays out.
Yeah.
We'll revisit that.
So again, as we talked about earlier, answered a ton of questions this week, but all it did was introduce even more.
Even more.
Great news is this episode was longer than any of the previous episodes, and I think that that's going to be a theme going forward.
We're 42 minutes long. It was the longest episode they've had so far.
So we'll get some. I think they're going to continue to get a little bit longer, and they're only going to get more complex, and I'm looking forward to next week. It'll be great.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
And all right, let's get into other news items this week and move forward in the agenda this week.
Okay, so Don Cheadle, he has been confirmed as War Machine in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
That's
so
huge.
He's going to be in that show. That opens up a lot of possibilities. And we've gotten into this. I think, what episode was it where we talked in depth about Don taking the place of the other War Machine?
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard, Rhodey.
Episode one, we went through our ratings.
Yeah. We kind of discussed how we really liked Terrence, and we thought he should have stayed with that. But Don's still great. We'll see if he can hold his own show. But yeah, he's in that, Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Well, we know he's going to get his own Disney Plus show in the future. It's already on the slate.
Armor Wars
is coming, and it's really going to focus around War Machine and him innovating that armor. And so he's going to get his own show. But the fact that he's going to be in that does bring some outside influence from a character perspective into that show. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that. And another bit of news is Justice League. Zack Snyder's Justice League is rated R. So
not surprising.
Sorry, kiddos, but rated R. So it's going to be, I think, language, and it's going to get gory.
No Gal Gadot nudity?
Smoke show. You wanted me to say that? I'm going to say that. By the way, guess who I'm starting to think is a major smoke show? Monica Rambeau. I'm starting to kind of dig the fro. Like, I think smoke show fro with Monica Rambeau, I mean, I might make T-shirts with that on there. Well,
we're going to look forward to the future.
And you know, I love Darcy. Rankings. Darcy is like a hidden smoke show to me. She's probably not in my top 10. Neither of them are, but whatever. Yeah, rated R.
No surprise there, though. I think we all expected it to be rated R. We've heard there's a lot of foul language that he's introduced into the show, and
so we're going to get Batman saying "fuck."
Yeah, basically.
Basically,
right.
Okay, so Black Panther. The director of Black Panther has been greenlit on a Wakanda series in Disney Plus, right? So he's starting to develop a Wakanda series. What's his name, the director?
Ryan Coogler.
Ryan Coogler is going to direct a Wakanda-specific series for Disney Plus, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, really exciting. We found out a few months ago that he had signed on to not only direct and write the Black Panther 2 movie. We found out more details about his contract, which included a Wakanda-specific Disney Plus series where it's really going to go into the city and some of the other tribes. Really exciting. I think Ryan Coogler's an incredibly talented director, incredibly talented writer, and he deserves that freedom in that universe because he did such a great job with the first movie.
Bring in White Tiger. Bring in some wacky shit in there. What a great opportunity for him to really explore.
Really explore that environment, sure.
I'm going to skip the next bit of news here because we'll end with that, but the Hobgoblin is rumored for Spider-Man 3. What's your feelings on that? The Hobgoblin. Why don't you give a quick... The Goblin, the Green Goblin, and the Hobgoblin, two different characters?
Two different characters. So the Green Goblin, Harry Osborn, probably one of Spider-Man's first
biggest nemesis.
Well, right.
Arguably.
Part of his rogue squadron, but one of his biggest, if not initial, enemies that he's ever fought. The Hobgoblin was a character they developed many years later as an offshoot of that. Very similar set of abilities, you know, set of technology that it used. Come to find out it was Harry Osborn, Norman Osborn's son. Took on the persona of Hobgoblin. And
which was Peter Parker's friend.
One of his best friends, right? And so the news is exciting, but also...
Who's going to play the Hobgoblin?
Who knows? But
could it be the fat kid that's his buddy and the rest of the
movie? Well, that is...
He's dropped like 60 pounds. He's like ripped now.
Right.
So who knows?
Well, he played a version of Hobgoblin as well, right? So that's not Harry Osborn in the Spider-Man movies today. It was the later version of the Hobgoblin. So Ned Leeds... if anybody's wondering, Ned Leeds actually became the Hobgoblin later on as well, but...
And Ned is the name of his buddy.
His buddy.
We all heard
when Ned Leeds was in the Spider-Man Homecoming movie, we were like, wait a minute, that Ned Leeds becomes the Hobgoblin at some point in time. So does that happen? I don't know. I'm fearful, just like you are, Tony. We've talked about this earlier. Spider-Man 3 has become incredibly busy from a character, plot, perspective. How do they fit all these villains and all these superheroes into one movie? We had an interview this week on Variety, I believe, had an interview with Tom Holland talking about Spider-Man 3. He didn't, as he usually does, he didn't give up too many details, although he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he did say that this is the most ambitious single superhero movie ever created. And what he meant by that was, you know, the Avengers movies and, you know, Civil War and these ones that were in Infinity War and Endgame were meant to be team movies. This movie is a single movie, and he says it's ambitious. And looking at the cast of characters, I agree. And again, we're trusting in Marvel and to some extent Sony to do this right. But I'm concerned that it's getting a little too...
The animated Into the Spider-Verse was such a huge success. They're trying to emulate that in live action, I think. And you're right. It's very busy. It's very complicated. I hope they do it right. I trust in Marvel once again. I'm a wind-up toy. Wind me up, Marvel. I'll follow your lead. We got news about the Suicide Squad. They released the synopsis, so we kind of know what it's about. Is Suicide Squad, James Gunn, director, Guardians of the Galaxy director, horror picture director, great director. He is doing Suicide Squad. It's a standalone. It has nothing to do. You don't even have to see the first Suicide Squad to understand that it's its own thing. And we got a little bit of synopsis, right?
We did, and the movie's going to come out on August 6th. I think in the interest of time, we won't read through the synopsis here. We're really pressed on time.
Yeah,
so let's...
a bunch of characters from a prison get released. They put on an island with a bunch of bad guys, and they're trying to extract a somebody from the island, and I don't think everybody's going to live. I think we're
going
to see some major
deaths. The island
is
Corto Maltese, and they all get dropped on an island with a basically succeed or die mission. Very in line with the Suicide Squad in the comics, and I'm hopeful based on the fact it's James Gunn that this will be a very successful
movie.
Give me
a trailer, and I'll get more excited about
right.
it. You
well,
know?
Hopefully right. tomorrow.
Right, and hopefully, we'll yeah, Super right. Bowl. Super Bowl trailer's coming tomorrow. Hopefully we get a lot. Another bit of news out right now that we're very excited about is The Boys 3 is starting to film in Toronto.
Yeah, Season 3. Season 2 ended on a great ending with
amazing
just such a great season. And those of you who haven't watched The Boys on Amazon Prime, please do so. It is a
outstanding.
It is a crazy twist on the superhero genre, and we're looking forward to season 3, but the fact that they're starting to film that now is great.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. And that leaves us to our last bit of news, which is Elizabeth Olsen said in an interview that there is, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, so we won't spend too much time on it. But a little bit earlier, Elizabeth Olsen said that there is a reveal.
So she was asked.
She was asked.
Is there a cameo in the show that would cause an audience reaction akin to Luke Skywalker showing up at the end of Mandalorian?
At the end of Mandalorian, correct. And all this is perspective-based as far as I'm concerned. Now, does Elizabeth Olsen consider Evan Peters' cameo or his reveal at the end of Episode 5
no way.
Big enough? Is it?
No way.
You're in her mind? You know?
Well, I think this also combines...
By the way, Elizabeth Olsen smoke show.
This also combines with what we heard from Paul Bettany the week earlier, where he had gotten to work with an actor that he was so excited to work with that he had never gotten to work with before, but he's always wanted to have
correct.
Scenes with this person.
Yes.
So I think you combine both of these. There's a cameo that's going to shock us.
Right.
And he gets to work with an actor that he's always wanted to work with.
He said a he.
Right.
So is it Evan Peters that Elizabeth Olsen was talking about? Now, Paul Bettany, was he talking about Doctor Strange?
That was our original theory that Doctor Strange shows up in this show, but I'm thinking it could be some
other...
Are
they both talking about Doctor Strange? His name is
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Butchered it, as usual. Titanium butchers everybody's name.
But could it be Benedict Cumberbatch? That would... I would say be shocking, but not on the level of Luke Skywalker.
Not on the level of Luke Skywalker.
So let's think about what it could be.
Magneto. It maybe it's...
Ian McKellen or the other version of Magneto.
I think it's Ian McKellen. Well, if you're going to do a guy that is a legend of acting, and you have to put it at that level.
I agree. The Michael Fassbender version... Would while
it'd still be shocking.
It would still be shocking, and it would be in line with the time period that Evan Peters came in from. But is this an actor that Paul Bettany's always wanted to work with?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But Michael Fassbender showing up, that would shock me for sure, showing up as Magneto. But the Ian McKellen version of Magneto showing up, I mean, that would blow us all away for
no
sure.
No question.
And yeah. It would be an actor that Paul Bettany would say, I've always wanted to work with this actor. You know, that.
What about your counterpart?
Yeah.
Professor
That's the other
X.
one. Charles Xavier showing up. If it, you know, again, either version of him would be shocking. But you know, Patrick Stewart would be the person that I would think Paul Bettany would say, I've always wanted to work with this actor. So, I mean, that would be a huge one as well.
I don't know. That's a question. Are those misleading interviews to throw fans into a frenzy to pull their hair out to try to decipher who's going to show up in a cameo that
again,
they think?
And I touched on this. I think the other two options that would blow us away is if we saw Mr. Fantastic, I don't care what version or who it is, that would blow us away that they introduced somebody from the Fantastic Four in this show. That would just floor everybody about, oh my God, well, the Fantastic Four are here.
Magneto, Fantastic Four, I think are on that same level as Luke Skywalker showing up in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I think you're right. But I don't know what her perception of floor is. You know, like her perception, was Evan Peters it? Was she talking about Evan Peters? Because although shocking, it was kind of already known, right? We talked about it really early. Like, when is he going to show up in this? We know he's in it.
I feel, you know, the fact that we're talking about this is so cool. I mean, it's just the, we don't know. And the fact it's going to come at some point in time is just, it just makes me, you know, giddy. So I can't wait to find out who it is.
Professor's giddy, people. Yeah. Buckle up, Professor's giddy.
All right. Well, we've got a few minutes here left for our top of the week. And frankly, this is one that could take.
We could do a whole show on it. We could do another hour episode on this topic of the week.
So the topic of the week, and Tony and I have talked, Titanium and I have talked about this earlier, Marvel casting. So the casting department of Marvel Studios is incredible.
Second to none.
They have not only been able to secure some of the most popular actors and actresses in the history of cinema to play these superhero characters, but they've also taken relative unknowns and turned them into superstars.
Sure.
And that combination by itself is amazing. And we're going to quickly go through this list of all of the people that have shown up in Marvel's movies, and you will be blown away by their credentials.
No question.
Blown away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll joke, the one joke I'll give is, so one of the people on this list is Gwyneth Paltrow. And the reason why she showed up in Iron Man was she was buddies. She was buddies with him. And she said, and he said, hey, do you want to be in a movie that everybody else will watch? So up until that point in her career, she had been in a lot of artsy movies and really people that hadn't, you know, not a lot of people go to the theaters to see those movies. And she had actually said, she had said, yeah, I'll be in a movie. And then she ends up being in Iron Man, which is kind of funny.
That's hilarious that he used that, because she won an Oscar for Shakespeare in Love, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So let's go through this real quick. Sure. So, of course, the most decorated of all these is Cate Blanchett. She played Hela in Thor Ragnarok. She's got two Oscars for Best Supporting Actress and Best Actress in The Aviator and Blue Jasmine, but she's been nominated 5 other times.
So unbelievable.
Just an incredible resume. Mahershala Ali played Luke Cage. In Luke Cage, played Cottonmouth, is going to be the new Blade. Has won 2 Oscars in the last 3 years. Best Supporting Actor for Green Book. Best Supporting Actor for Moonlight.
Unbelievable.
Incredible actor.
How'd they pull him? That was amazing.
Well, and again, he hasn't even shown up in Marvel Studios yet. He's shown up in Marvel Television, but not Marvel Studios yet. But he's on the slate, right?
Stay tuned, right.
It's like, you win an Oscar, go interview with Marvel. That seems like what the formula is. Michael Douglas. So he's won 2 Oscars, 1 for acting as Best Actor in Wall Street, as everybody's aware. He also won a Best Picture as a producer for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, was in Ant-Man, plays Hank Pym. Jeff Bridges.
And is going to be in upcoming movies as well, right?
Right, yeah. Jeff Bridges played Obadiah Stane in Iron Man, the big bad.
Ironmonger.
The Ironmonger. Best Actor win for Crazy Heart. But he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 nominations beside that Best Actor win.
Yeah.
Last Picture Show, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, Starman, The Contender, True Grit, Hell or High Water. Incredible actor.
Yeah.
Anthony Hopkins, everybody's aware of his win for The Silence of the Lambs, is a Best Actor. Plays Odin in the Thor movies. Was also nominated 4 other times for 4 other movies. Remains of the Day, Nixon, Amistad, 2 Popes. 4 other nominations for Anthony Hopkins. William Hurt plays a big, huge Thunderbolt Ross in the Hulk movies, Captain America Civil War, is now Secretary of Defense in all the Marvel movies.
And we're going to see him in Black Widow as well.
Right. Nominated 4 times. Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
Crazy.
Children of Lesser God, Broadcast News, and The History of Violence. Tommy Lee Jones won Best Supporting Actor for The Fugitive. Of course, he was in Captain America First Avenger. Nominated 3 other times for JFK, In the Valley of Elia, and Lincoln. Ben Kingsley won for Best Actor for Gandhi. And of course, we saw him as Trevor Slattery in
the Mandalorian.
The Mandarin.
Mandarin. Mandalorian.
The Mandarin.
Star Wars.
Iron Man 3. But was nominated 3 other times for Bugsy, Sexy Beast, House of Sand and Fog. Robert Redford from The Winter Soldier. Nominated 2 times.
Crazy poll.
Right, for The Sting and Quiz Show, but also won Best Director for Ordinary People. Natalie Portman won Best Actress for Black Swan. She,
great movie.
Of course, was in the original Thor movie. He's going to be in Thor Love and Thunder.
Smoke show.
Yep.
Absolute smoke show.
But also was nominated twice again for Closer and Jackie.
Another smoke show.
Right. Marissa Tomei,
mm-hmm.
Spider-Man Homecoming, won Best Supporting Actress for My Cousin Vinny, but also nominated for In the Bedroom and The Wrestler. Angelina Jolie.
Smoke show.
In the upcoming Eternals movie.
Are we going to get a trailer for that during the Super Bowl?
I hope so tomorrow. I mean,
I
really,
need a trailer for that.
I mean, they've been holding it off for
so long.
I'm
jonesing.
Yeah, let's do it. But she won Best Actress for Girl Interrupted, Best Supporting Actress for Girl Interrupted, also nominated for Changeling. Sam Rockwell, great actor, love him.
Awesome.
Played, was in Iron Man 2, won Best Supporting Actor for Three Billboards Outside.
He's coming back for some of the Disney Plus shows, too.
Right, as Hammer.
Hammer.
Justin Hammer.
Justin Hammer.
Right.
Hammer Industries.
Right, and was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Vice. Benicio Del Toro from Guardians of the Galaxy played the Collector, was in Traffic, won Best Supporting Actor for that movie, and was also a nominee for 21 Grams. Rachel Weisz, who was
smoke show
in the upcoming Black Widow movie, won for The Constant Gardener, Best Supporting Actress, and was also a nominee for The Favorite. Jennifer Connelly.
No, you and I have talked about her before. Smoke show.
So she won Best Supporting Actress for A Beautiful Mind. Brie Larson, Captain Marvel, won Best Actress for the movie Room, and she was cast as Captain Marvel right after she won that Oscar.
I mean, almost exactly after.
Right. Lupita Nyong'o.
Smoke show.
12 Years a Slave won Best Supporting Actress for that movie.
She's in Black Panther.
Black Panther, right?
And is confirmed for Black Panther 2.
Right. Mm-hmm. Gwyneth Paltrow, we just mentioned, in Iron Man, won mm-hmm. Best Actress for Shakespeare in Love.
Yep.
Tilda Swinton played the Ancient One in Doctor Strange. Won Best Supporting Actress for a movie called Michael Clayton. Forest Whitaker, also in Black Panther, won Best Actor for The Last King of Scotland. Bradley Cooper, who those of you who aren't aware, is Rocket Raccoon in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Hey, I'm going to go on a limb here. He's a smoke show. I'm sorry. As a man, he sure. is devilly sexy.
As Rocket?
Not as Rocket, but as Bradley Cooper. But yes, he's the voice of Rocket, which is tremendous.
Yeah, and shows his reach, by the way. But nominated 4 times, both for Best Supporting Actor and Best Actor in movies like Silver Linings Playbook, American Hustle, American Sniper, Star is Born, great movies. Glenn Close from Guardians of the Galaxy as well. The person who has received the most nominees without a win in the history of the Oscars, by the way, has been nominated 7 times. For The Wife, The World According to Garp, The Big Chill, The Natural, Fatal Attraction, Dangerous Liaisons, and Albert Nobbs.
Wow.
Seven
what a
times without a win.
What a resume.
She is now the current record holder of that. Annette Bening in Captain Marvel, won for The Grifters, Best Supporting Actress, nominated 3 other times for American Beauty, Being Julia, and Kids Are All Right. Edward Norton, who was in The Incredible Hulk.
One of my favorite Hulks.
Yep. Nominated 3 times. For a Best Supporting Actor and Best Actor in Primal Fear, American History X, and The Birdman. Michelle Pfeiffer, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Smoke
of course.
Show.
Yeah, another sport, smoke show. Nominated for Dangerous Liaisons, Fabulous Baker Boys, and Love Field.
And will be in Quantum.
Yeah, will be in Quantumania.
Yep.
Mark Ruffalo, of course, plays the Hulk now in The Avengers.
Guy Smoke Show.
Nominated 3 times for The Kids Are All Right, Foxcatcher, and Spotlight. Sylvester Stallone had a little cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Of course, he won Best Picture for Rocky and was also nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Creed. Taika Waititi, the director and starred in Thor Ragnarok, won for Best Adapted Screenplay and was a nominee for Best Picture for Jojo Rabbit.
Crazy movie.
Robert Downey Jr.,
yep.
we know from Iron Man, was nominee twice, once for Best Actor for Chaplin and Best Supporting Actor for Tropic Thunder. Jimin Hounsou was in the Guardians of the Galaxy and also in Captain Marvel. Nominated twice for In America for Best Supporting Actor and Blood Diamond for Best Supporting Actor. Scarlett Johansson.
Smoke show.
Iron Man 2. Nominated for Marriage Story and Jojo Rabbit.
We'll get a trailer at the... Another trailer during the Super Bowl, I hear.
They'll probably show us too much now at this point in time. Jude Law in Captain Marvel, nominated twice for...
Guy Smoke Show.
Talented Mr. Ripley in Cold Mountain. Jeremy Renner, who's in originally in Thor, has been Hawkeye and all the other Marvels since. Nominated for The Hurt Locker and The Town. Angela Bassett in Black Panther, nominated for What's Love Got to Do with It.
Wow.
Josh Brolin in Guardians of the Galaxy and other movies as Thanos, nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Milk.
So good.
Don Cheadle from Iron Man 2 was nominated for Best Actor for Hotel Rwanda. Benedict Cumberbatch was nominated for The Imitation Game.
He is Doctor Strange.
Right.
What a great casting. Perfect.
Chiwetel Ejiofor was in Doctor Strange as well, played Baron Mordo, nominated for 12 Years a Slave. Lawrence Fishburne, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and he was nominated for What's Love Got to Do with It for Best Actor. Jake Gyllenhaal in Spider-Man Far From Home was nominated for Brokeback Mountain. Selma Hayek in the new Eternals movie was a nominee for Frida. Terrence Howard from Iron Man, nominated for Hustle and Flow. Samuel L. Jackson was a nominee for Best Supporting Actor for Pulp Fiction. Of course, he plays Nick Fury. Daniel Kaluuya, who was in Black Panther, he was nominated for Best Actor for Get Out, and he's probably one of the hottest actors in Hollywood at the moment.
No question.
Michael Keaton from Spider-Man Homecoming, nominated for Best Actor for Birdman. Rachel McAdams.
One of my favorite Batmans.
Yep. Rachel McAdams in
Smoke Show.
Doctor Strange, nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Kamal Nanjiani from The Eternals.
Smoke Show.
If anybody's not seen this movie, The Big Sick, it is hilarious and just a wonderful movie. Nominated for Best Original Screenplay. Florence Pugh is also in the Black Widow movie, playing the new version of Black Widow, hopefully.
Smoke Show.
Nominee for Best Supporting Actress in Little Women. Tim Roth in The Incredible Hulk.
Love him.
We'll be back, from what we understand, in the She-Hulk series. Yes. Nominated for the movie Rob Roy. Mickey Rourke in Iron Man 2 was nominated for the movie Wrestler. Stanley Tucci in Captain America the First Avenger was nominated for the lovely
most understated role ever in
Professor Erskine. And
so great.
So it was great.
He was so amazing in that. I mean, that really set the tone.
Yep.
Unbelievable. I'm sorry.
It was great. Stanley Tucci, yes, was nominated for a movie called The Lovely Bones as Best Supporting Actor. And Alfre Woodard was Captain America Civil War, of course. She had a little cameo in that movie. Was nominated for Cross Creek. So that's just the winners and the nominees. If we miss some, let us know. I'm sure there are some other ones out there.
Yeah, absolutely. If you listen to that list and we missed something, or if you guys caught something, put it in the comments. We'll
own up to it.
Absolutely. Right. We did in the past. We missed something in the past, and YouTubers called us out on it. So we love that. So please, Twitter, at SuperTalkPod, and on YouTube, please put some comments in, and please subscribe. Please subscribe.
Yeah, so I know we ran through that really quickly, but I think the bottom line is Marvel has the ability to attract these incredible actors and actresses
A-listers.
To play these, from what we understand, incredibly important roles in our lives. And they've brought these characters to life in a super awesome fashion. And they're going to continue to do that. And we've heard all these rumors about castings they have coming up. We trust that when they put somebody in a role, they know what they're doing.
No question.
And the crazy thing about it, Tony, is the people that we didn't know anything about that they put in these really important roles that became superstars.
Huh?
Like Chris Evans,
oh,
right?
I'm sorry. You call me Tony or Titanium?
Titanium.
Oh, I'll answer if you say Titanium, yeah. Yeah, Chris Evans, great example. You're absolutely correct, Professor. Chris Evans. I mean, all these actors. Paul Rudd, one of my favorites.
Well,
Paul Rudd,
I would say he was, you know, my kids know who Paul Rudd is. He was in, you know, great, you know, movies.
Hilarious.
Yeah, but Chris Evans had some bit parts in a couple of movies and was in the Fantastic Four movies, so comic book nerds knew who he was, but really had
like
done not
I.
much, and then all of a sudden he becomes Captain America.
Unbelievable.
Chris Hemsworth was really in nothing that anybody had heard of before he was cast as Thor, and now he's a superstar, right? Tom Hiddleston, when he got cast as Loki, people were like, who? Tom Hiddleston?
Right.
He had played in a couple of TV series on the BBC and maybe been in a couple of movies in the UK.
Theater actor.
Right.
Unbelievable.
He's one of the biggest stars in Marvel now.
Bottom line is trust Marvel and their casting.
Yeah, and one of your buddies, Dave Bautista.
Buddies, yeah.
Right? So
Dave Bautista. Look, quick. They called him Tiny. He was a bouncer at Lulu's, and a buddy of mine, a fraternity brother of mine, was a manager there, and he introduced me to this house of a guy, and he said, you know, look after this moron. He might get in trouble. He might not know who he is at the end of the night. But they called him Tiny. It was Dave Bautista. Before he got into... before he got into wrestling, he was a bouncer at Lulu's down in Washington, D.C. So very cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact is, you meant just trust in Marvel. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So what do you think? What do you think, Professor? Let's ring the school bell and let's
it's been a long show and we apologize for that. But we also always appreciate everybody for listening. So
absolutely.
Remember, please reach out to us. So we'll call this a show for this week. So that's it for us. We'll be back next week for more Super Talk. So to get in touch with us on social media, hit us up via email at supertalkpodcast@outlook.com or at supertalkpod on Twitter. Until then, stay super, everyone. We'll be right back.